Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, in what year were Jews first given political rights by the Polish king? Our guest this week is Amelia Serrayer of the Department of Slavic Philology at the Complutense University in Madrid, where she's done extensive research on the Jews in Poland. This week, she'll give us an overview of their history, and next week, she'll tell us about three important Jewish religious and intellectual movements that took root there.
Thank you very much for speaking with us, Amelia. First, could you give us some background about the history of the Jews in Poland?
Certainly. Thank you, Linda, for this invitation. As you have probably heard, the presence of Jews in Poland began in the 10th century with merchants that cover all the way from Kiev to Prague, which was a commercial route for slaves. And it's quite curious the fact that when Jews for the first time came to Poland, the Polish state was born. There's a coincidence in time. So the thing is that one of the first testimonies of this presence of Jews in Poland, it's a book written by a merchant, Ibn Jakub, which was born here in Tortosa, and now Spain, of course, and there it was called Al-Andalus, as you all know. And it's also a very important testimony because thanks to it, we know that the city of Krakow, which was the ancient capital of Poland, already existed in the 10th century.
So he was from Tortosa, yeah. And he wrote about the existence of the Jews in Poland in the 10th century. How did he know about this? How did he get there?
No, that's a good question. The thing is that he, from the year 960 to the year 970, was an ambassador of the Khalifa from Al-Andalus, and he was in charge of visiting the courts of Otton the First of German Empire. And also he had to visit the King Boleslav in Prague, in the modern Czech Republic. And in the middle of this very, very long trip, he passed by Krakow. He was not only an ambassador, but also a merchant. So he heard about the city of Krakow as an economical center. And thereby he stopped there and mentioned it in his brief account of the trip.
So these Jews, were they itinerant or did they actually live there? And then what happened?
In the very beginning, they were itinerant, that's right. But that is why that some historians thought that the origin of the Jewish settlement in Poland was in the 13th century, because we know for sure that then they ran out of Germany, they were persecuted, so Poland was near, it was like a rational decision, and that's why the legend of what means Poland, Jewish name to Poland, refers to that. It says that when they were persecuted in Germany, so Jews tried to make a living in Poland, and as they saw that they were warmly welcomed in the beginning, so they said to themselves, "Polin, so here I should live." And in this way, they created the Hebrew and Yiddish name of Poland. Some others say that it's just a coincidence that they saw a good omen in this, no? That what the name of the country meant in their own language. And some others said that this legend was also, in a way, enhanced by Rabbi Moshe Serles from Krakow, which in the 16th century wrote about Poland as a paradise for the Jews, Paradis Judeorum. So some of the people identified his teaching with this legend, but we yet to know for sure, owing to his books that he called Poland Paradis Judaeorum, so Jewish paradise in Latin.
You talk about the Siglo de Oro, the golden age of Jewish culture in Poland in the 16th and the beginning of the 17th centuries. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Of course. There is another parallel between Polish history and Jewish history in Poland, because in Polish culture, the golden age, it is said to be the 16th century. Nevertheless, the Jewish Siglo de Oro, golden age in Poland, it's longer. It's 150 years, but it begins simultaneously. No? It's like from the beginning of the 16th century to more or less 1750. And then there are several factors that explain the flourishment of Jewish culture, some of them political, because in this age we're talking about the Republic of Two Nations, that was Poland at this time called. It was paradoxically a monarchy, but it had a parliament. And Jews had also their own council, their own representatives, and it was called the Parliament of the, or the Council, we can translate it in both ways, of the Four Lands, same Czterechziem. It was like a meeting of all the leaders, the rabbis and the most important people of the communities in Lublin, which was one of the centers, Volhynia, Russia, and also the so-called Great Poland. And they met every year. They had to decide which percentage of the taxes should be given to the crown and some other internal affairs. And this parliament gave them political visibility, also helped in a way like the cultural exchanges, but also economical, financial, because when they met, there always was, at the same time, there was also a feria, like where all the merchants sold the things. And we see in this time that the first books are printed. We have the first Talmud in Lublin, since it was a huge center of the Jewish culture. By the end of the 16th century, it's the first edition in 1580. It is the very first book printed in Poland in Hebrew. And then we also know that there was another community very, very active and lively in Krakow, directed by this rabbi which I mentioned in the beginning, Moshe Serles. And his works were also, of course, printed and widely spread.
Very often when we talk about history in one part of the world, we kind of lose track of the whole picture of what was going on in other places. And I'm surprised and somewhat impressed that this golden age was 16th century, which was right after the expulsion from Spain.
Yeah.
Did the church play any part in Poland at the time? And if so, how did the church relate to the Jews in Poland? Because obviously the Inquisition was the church in Spain.
Yes, we have to say that in this very point, Poland was quite original for the time, because there has never been an Inquisition there as a political institution or religious. So certainly some of the Jews from Spain, Sephardic Jews, came to Poland, but just a little group because of the long distance. And they settled in Zamość. Presently it's the northeastern part, very close to this city of Lublin, because there they knew that the local governor had these tolerant views and also wanted to promote the development of the area, and he understood that Jews were going to be a big contribution for that. In Poland, as we are talking of this Republic of the Two Nations, we have to think that it's a multi-ethnical state that cover a very, very huge territory. There was a period when it was the biggest country in Europe, even, because we have to think about today's Lithuania, some part of Estonia, Ukraine, White Russia, and Poland. So altogether, there are so many groups and so many different religions that the kings understood that they needed a big army to defend such an enormous territory, and they needed soldiers from very different confessions. So they had this dual policy that they supported the Pope and the very Catholic towards their enemies and in the foreign affairs, let's say, but in their own country they were tolerant. It's not known today. We have this picture of the tragic events in the 20th century, and we should not, of course, forever forget about that. But we have also to know that there was an incredible culture beforehand, a culture that counts with 100 years of history, and it shouldn't be forgotten either.
Can you tell us a little bit about the role of the Jews in Polish independence?
Yes, yes, it's a very long history again, and we have to say, first of all, that in 1793, Poland disappears as a state from the map of Europe until 1918, after the First World War, because it was divided into Russia, Austria, and Germany. Germany is the modern name, because then it was Prussia, as you know, but they were like the mortal enemies, which have an alliance, a political alliance, in a moment where Poland was also fighting with Sweden. So it was like too many enemies for a country to resist. And the thing was that from the very beginning, a part of the Jewish community involved themselves in the resistance movement, because in 1793 we had this Polish-Russian war. We see that the country is about to lose its independence. So in this revolt, led by the famous general Tadeusz Kościuszko, who fought also in the American independence, there was like a Jewish division inside the Polish army, and it was led by a very charismatic man, Berek Joselowicz. And it had its own terms, because they tried not to make them fight in Sabbath, in Saturdays. They let them wear this mustache, and they also had kosher food under war terms. It's quite amazing that this is possible. They also, it was very interesting, had a kind of flag of their own, in which there was a reference to the Kalisz Edict, the Bill of Rights that the Jewish community received in 1264, in very, very early. You know? And the thing was that then Bolesław the Pius, the king of Poland, gave political rights to Jews. It's an unprecedented fact in Middle Ages in Europe. So even in the 18th century, by the end, when this edict was also valid with very little changes, the Jewish soldiers came to fight and remember it and defend it in a way. Then in the 19th century, we have the struggle of Polish nation and the country to become independent, and some part of the Jewish community involved very actively in all the uprisings, which are the uprising, November uprising in 1830, which lasted for almost a year, to 1831. Then we have the uprising in the city of Krakow in 1846, and the January uprising, which was in 1864, and it was like all the country was in this very last uprising was raised against the three invasors, not because the first one was against the Russian Empire. And the second one involved most of all the city of Krakow, so it's not thought to be as representative. And in the first one, you have the very charismatic figure of Jakub Lewinsky, who had Jewish origins, but his family had become Christianized already. They were followers of Jakub Frank, actually. And he was a general of this uprising, so he had a very important role. And we also have the son of Berek Juselevich, which fought with Kosciuszko, Józef Berkowicz. He involved in this uprising and also recruited a division of Jewish soldiers. Some of the fight things were in the Prague district of Warsaw, and it was a district mainly inhabited by Jews. So the victims were mostly Jews, which were fighting for Polish independence. And we also have the very important figure of the Rabbi Meisels, which was the leader in the beginning of the community of Krakow. So he himself he had a leading role in this uprising of the city, and was the person that represented the whole city in the parliament of the Austrian Empire. So the Catholic people voted for him to be the representative, one of the very few ones. And after this uprising, he was offered the charge of leader of a community in Warsaw. So he moved there and also prepared this climate for the final uprising with some other rabbis of the city. And was a kind of mortal enemy for the Russian authorities. So he suffered from exile for some time in London. And he died by the end of the 19th century in Warsaw again. But he was living under arrest in a way. It was like impossible for him to to have such an active role in the resistance for the country, let's say.
So the movement for Polish independence really lasted a century, more than a century. And since there was such a large participation of Jews in it, did the Jews suffer more from the repression, or was it just everybody who suffered more or less the same from the repression?
The thing was that the Jews suffered for seldom reasons. The Russian Empire had a tradition, anti-Jewish tradition, that began with Catherine the Great and very, very long. So in the part of Poland which was now under the Tsar of the Russian Empire, they suffered from persecution. That was the policy of the country, unfortunately. And on the other way around, it is also true that we have to think that in the Russian Empire, the Jewish population was so huge that they also have their areas. They have their very strong tidings, but they have some cities, some places where the culture could flourish, as Odessa or even Vilnius, the former capital of the Lithuanian side of Poland, today's Lithuania capital, of course, and Warsaw, of course. So we have to think that there were pogroms, and also some of them were like rewarded and in a way created by the authorities. So people were giving money to attack Jews. And they also had this restriction sometimes to travel, to speak their own language. It is said that these laws were more rigid toward Jews than towards Polish people. But they also have these centers of Jewish culture where Warsaw, that had such a huge Jewish population, that there they have theaters, they have cafes. They were safe in a way, and they had their own journals and so on.
So this went on until, let's say, 1918, when Poland finally got its independence after World War I.
Yeah.
Was that directly because of the Versailles Treaty?
Yes, that's right. There was a commission created. It was like an acknowledgement of this several uprisings and this tragic end of the country, and also the big community of Polish intellectuals in Paris had an influence on this. So in the Versailles Treaty, it was also a way to punish those who had lost the war. Of course, it was decided that Poland would recover the independence, and it would look like more or less like in the Middle Ages, because it was quite complicated to after 150 years, those territories which were now part of the Soviet world. It was complicated in the times of revolution, and so to give them back to Poland. And we have to think about many factors, linguistical and so on, and the mixture of different minorities living there. But nevertheless, in 1918, Poland recovers its place, and the frontiers are similar to today's Poland, even though after the Second World War, the map was changed again. So we have all the time this common history in a way. I think that both nationalities, it's also determined. The word is complicated, but that Jews and Poles have in common that they have moved all around the world, or even staying at their homeland. The wars have made that they lived in several different countries, not moving from home. So.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. I'll leave you now with Orientalische Motiv 2, recorded by klezmer fiddler Josef Solinski in Warsaw in 1908. This recording is from the CD Yiddish, Hebrew, and Jewish Music, an Anthology of Klezmer, 1905 to 1952. See you next week.